This is the Intrepid 77 Podcast. Hello and welcome to the James Bond Complex. I'm the Intrepid 77. Welcome to the show and hope you're doing well. You've just heard my involvement on Ian Fleming's second edition. We did the book Live and Let Die here on the Complex. What I kind of omitted from that was the fact that I've got 2.5 pages of notes in regards to what James Bond eats. I've already done an interview with Edward Biddulph, who is the author of License to Cook, a guy who put together a whole cookbook about the food that James Bond eats in the novels, because it is kind of scarce him eating or having a meal on film. We do see him drink, but we don't see him have a meal on film. And it is kind of an important part of the books, because if you read anything else about Ian Fleming, especially his book Thrilling Cities, you know that food is kind of an important thing in how Fleming, you know, treats the character of James Bond. It's an important and integral, in my view, part of who James Bond is, how he eats, what he chooses to eat, and how he chooses to do it. But also, the way that Fleming describes anything in life is with great detail. And in Live and Let Die, not only does he go to extreme lengths to describe 12 separate meals, while some things do repeat themselves, he does explain why they repeat themselves, kind of establishes James Bond's default food choices, but also it kind of sets the pace of what they were eating at the time. And this is really a great example of traveling through a Bond novel. He goes from London to New York, but then New York all the way to the Caribbean via train, via Florida and all that. So we kind of have a little bit of Americana in there, which is abnormal because, well, not abnormal. It's interesting because when we talk about Thrilling Cities, initially it was kind of an issue for the American publication of that book because Ian Fleming had kind of slammed New York pretty hard. So in the American version of Thrilling Cities and some copies that you all might have, New York is kind of omitted. And in its place, 007 in New York is there with a recipe for scrambled eggs a la James Bond. In the actual publication that went through Europe and all that, the review of New York is very sour. He does have a very, I don't want to say low opinion, but he does have a lesser opinion of the city of New York at the time that he wrote it in the early 60s. Which is interesting because just years before, 1954, he wrote Live and Let Die and has kind of a different culinary experience with New York and kind of describes it differently. If we put kind of the characterization of the people and the town of New York in both Thrilling Cities and in Live and Let Die and just concentrate a moment on what they eat. It's very unique in that it might be different than what we would think of an Americana kind of meal today. In the first meal that he has, He has a variety of things, and not things that I would necessarily associate necessarily with New York per se. The first one is softshell crabs with tartar sauce. Now, I've had softshell crabs one time, and that was at a Benihana restaurant in downtown Montreal many moons ago. I don't have anything against softshell crabs. I think they're delicious. I don't really feel that they would be really part of New York culture. If there's any New Yorkers out there who want to correct me on this, go ahead. Maybe I'm wrong, but when I think of softshell crabs, I kind of think of maybe farther down the coast, going to Massachusetts and Maryland, etc. We'll get to Maryland a little bit later, but as an appetizer, he has softshell crabs with tartar sauce. And actually, I say appetizer, but the way that the meal is presented in the books with Leiter at his hotel room at the St. Regis, it's brought out as one meal. So there's softshell crabs with tartar sauce, as I've mentioned, flat beef hamburgers with fries, French fried potatoes, and broccoli. Now that's the kicker. I've never really seen on a steakhouse menu anywhere broccoli served as a side with a burger. Flat beef hamburgers in this situation, for the research I've done, does seem to mean like a smashed burger or kind of like a fast food kind of greasy spoon kind of burger, which I kind of feel might be weird as a room service serving at the St. Regis. Maybe a little bit of odd choice. I would have thought that maybe it would have been a steak, which would may have gone better with this. But anyway, flat beef hamburgers with fries and broccoli, which to me, like I said, it was a little bit odd. You know, you do get broccoli as a side to the steakhouse with fries, with burgers. I could try and convince my kids to eat that. They might. We'll see. And then for dessert, ice cream with butterscotch. Not odd in itself, but the fact that it's served at the same time kind of lends me to think that, you know, you're eating the soft shell crabs first, your burgers are getting cold, your fries are getting cold, then you eat those next. And as your burger and fries are getting cold, with your steamed broccoli obviously getting cold as well, there's nothing worse than steamed broccoli being eaten cold. Ice cream and butterscotch is warming up. So by the time he gets to the ice cream and butterscotch, probably not a wonderful experience. And then they drink a German white wine, which I find would be okay with the crab, but maybe not necessarily with the burgers. You know, I'm more of a beer kind of person with a burger, or, you know, when you're going with red meat, I'd go red wine. But Fleming must know what he's talking about. He must have tried this out at one point. From there, he does have a second meal, the next meal that he has before having an immensely massive breakfast at the St. Regis. His second meal is, this was when he's out on the town with Leiter, kind of looking for Mr. Big. They go out for little neck clams, which little neck clams I kind of see as more of a New England thing, not necessarily a New York thing, but a New England thing. I can see that definitely happen because I've had little neck clams in New England, so I can kind of see where that is going. Fried chicken Maryland, which is basically fried chicken with the inclusion of white gravy. There is a distinction between a white gravy and a brown gravy. So fried chicken Maryland, from what I can tell, is fried chicken with the white gravy, a little bit spicy, a little bit different than a Kentucky Fried Chicken, I guess. But this is also something I find a bit odd, that you're having fried chicken Maryland, specifically fried chicken Maryland, in New York City. And I saw a meme recently that Ray Crumpled of the Bond Armory posted about Maryland clams being kind of like, you know, different when they're in Maryland, and then, you know, other people claiming them as theirs somewhere else. I guess it's kind of like Louisiana Fried Chicken. There's a Louisiana Fried Chicken joint here in Quebec City, which kind of seems odd. There is a little bit of a French connection there, but they make good fried chicken. It's a little bit better than KFC, but still kind of odd for Quebec City. So, you know, if you really wanted real fried chicken Maryland and you're not in Maryland, is it really fried chicken Maryland? Anyway, that's a discussion for another podcast. He also has bacon and sweet corn, which sounds absolutely delicious. Again, not something that I would think would be necessarily local to New York. And then chicken sandwiches. And he kind of just mentions chicken sandwiches. We don't necessarily know if he means like a club sandwich or he means a chicken salad sandwich. This is kind of open for interpretation. And he eats a lot of chicken sandwiches. I mean, he eats them a little bit later when he gets on the train. But he has the whole adventure with Leiter in New York. They kind of get beaten up. Leiter escapes getting beaten up by Talking Jazz, etc., etc. He wakes up the next morning and orders double pineapple juice, cornflakes and cream, shirred eggs, bacon, a double espresso, and toast with marmalade. Now, we know that Bond has toast with marmalade. We know that he's got kind of like this trifecta of condiments that he adds to his toast when he's in London. And, you know, it's orange marmalade, Tiptree strawberry jam, and fresh honey that he has kind of as his trio with his scrambled eggs. Now, shirred eggs are kind of a different thing. They're also known as baked eggs. So they're pretty much eggs that have been baked in a ramekin. And so this is kind of not necessarily off for him, but it's the first and only time I've ever seen him order this. He usually orders scrambled eggs. So this is kind of maybe an odd thing for him to order. We see scrambled eggs happen a lot. He eats them in Casino Royale. He eats them here a couple of other times. This is his preferred way of preparing eggs. And in 007 in New York, the short story, there is a recipe for it. So scrambled eggs, definitely part of Ian Fleming and James Bond's staple diet. From there, he gets the call from Solitaire, and they're making their way to the train to kind of escape New York. He gets on the train, and the first thing he orders is chicken sandwiches. They mention that he orders Sanka. I don't know if the Sanka is just brought to him And Sanka is the kind of decaffeinated instant coffee drink that I'm not even sure is actually really coffee. I don't know if it's kind of like a chicory kind of thing going on. But I don't see him as purposely going out of his way to order this. I think this is maybe what was available on the train and this is what they brought him. Because you sometimes see this in hotels where they'll have like Sanka or something else in the hotel room. I don't know. Doesn't seem like his choice because, of course, we know that he likes his coffee strong and black. He orders himself an old-fashioned, and it's not necessarily mentioned what he has his old-fashioned as, what kind of whiskey he orders with it, if it's bourbon or whatnot. Kind of non-specific. From there, they're still on the train. He's with Solitaire. He orders himself some more food by then. They're kind of on their way to Jacksonville. They're kind of, you know, going through the Carolinas and things like that. So he looks at the dinner menu and nothing interests him. There's nothing on this menu that screams, this is what I want to eat. Probably because he had Sanka earlier. So he orders himself a dry martini. It comes bottled, which I found weird. But apparently back then, there were a couple of companies that did offer bottled, pre-mixed martinis. And I'm not talking about the martini brand Vermouth. Gordon's actually made, at that time, bottled martinis. So he was ordering a pre-mixed martini, kind of like a, kind of what you would call a pre-mixed cocktail that are a little more common today. Like a cooler, I guess you could say. He ordered scrambled eggs, bacon, sausage, a salad, and domestic camembert. Now, a couple of months ago, I had this whole big thing about Bond making his own salad dressing. It's not mentioned here, so I guess it's kind of a mania that came later, but he does make his own salad dressing in Moonraker without much of a big deal about it. There is a big deal made in John Gardner's book. If you want to have more on that, just go back into my archives and you'll find that episode. But he does order a salad to go along with that. And as well as some domestic camembert. So he obviously had a hankering for some cheese. This is the only time that I really see Bond ever ordering a specific kind of cheese. He does enjoy the blue cheese. And I'm trying to remember the specific type of blue cheese. But I know there's a cheese that they order at the end of a meal in Britain that's quite popular. And maybe it'll come back to me later. So maybe that's kind of replacing it. He's using it as a digestif. I know the other one will come to me, but I know that it's common. I know that even there was a hotel a couple of years ago who did a whole James Bond themed meal. I want to say that it was Rules who did this, but it was maybe another club that decided to do this. And they had this cheese at the end as a kind of digestif at the end. So they're still on the train. They get to Jacksonville. He orders himself some scrambled eggs, some orange juice, some coffee. He has some praise for the Florida orange juice because that is the one decent thing about his trip so far is that he gets to have, you know, some fresh orange juice and it's delicious. He says goodbye to Solitaire. She gets away from him. Felix rejoins him and they are in the Everglades and they have to have a meal together. And he kind of makes the comment that, you know, the Everglades is where people go to die. And this is for the food that they're eating is for oldsters. He's having tomato juice, boiled fish in white sauce, which does not sound appetizing at all. I mean, boiled fish. Fish is good on its own. I like grilled fish, you know, poached fish is good. But boiled fish in white sauce just sounds like, you know, cafeteria slop. To that, we add frozen turkey and cranberry and lemon curd, which also frozen turkey has been reconstituted, does sound a little bit like mush. Does sound like they're eating in an old folks' home, but maybe this is what some people enjoy. It's lemon curd with cream substitute. We've got to mention that as well. It's not real cream, it's cream substitute. So Bond is not enjoying this meal. Basically, after that, they decide to just go back to the hotel room and they just decide to start drinking. Once they go out and then into the night, they get to the bait shop. This is where Felix Leiter gets all mashed up. After all this, Bond is kind of recovering and things like that, and he's getting ready to move on. He goes and he orders himself the largest rare steak and fries, a pint of old granddad bourbon, and 2 cups of coffee. So I think the two cups of coffee is maybe to sober him up after a pint of bourbon. A pint of bourbon is dramatically a lot. A pint being about, what, 16 ounces, 17 ounces or something like that, or closer to 24 ounces of liquor. That's a lot of liquor. And I don't think the two cups of coffee are really going to balance all that out. Possibly the rare steak is going to absorb most of that. But Jesus, that is a lot of food. And I find it weird that he gets, you know, large rare steak right after his buddy gets mauled by a shark. It's I don't know how he feels like that. Feels like about that. It's kind of I find it's kind of strange. Maybe it's just, you know, Bond and his sick sense of humor. From there, the next morning he has a triple decker Western sandwich. So we do kind of get into that Americana club sandwich zone, but instead of, you know, a regular club sandwich, a BLT and a chicken sandwich, we're talking about, you know, a Western omelet sandwich, which sounds delicious. And I know that if you go on Edward Biddulph's website, jamesbondfood.com, he does have a recipe for that he published quite recently. He gets to Caribbean finally. We're off to the last three meals that he has. Once he gets to the Caribbean, he meets up with Strangways, and Strangways sets him up with... So he's set up by Strangways with Quarrel, and Quarrel is going to set him up with, you know, all the food that he needs and the training that he needs. So the 10th meal, once he's into the Caribbean, it's now we get into more of a Caribbean feel and more Caribbean food and more diverse food. And I feel that this might be a little bit more authentic, given that Ian Fleming spends quite a bit of his time in the Caribbean. So the first thing he has is what they call pawpaw, which is more commonly known as papaya, lime, purple star apples, which I think it's just called star fruit, or more commonly known as star fruit around here, but maybe it's still called purple star apples. I know them by the French name carambole, but it's a basically star fruit. Red bananas, which is not very common out here. Tangerines, eggs and bacon, Jamaican marmalade, guava jelly, and Blue Mountain coffee. Now, Blue Mountain coffee is known to be some of the best coffee in the world. I have had it on multiple occasions. It is very good. It's not that common to find in grocery stores around here. I do have to find it on special order most of the time, but it is absolutely the best kind of espresso coffee that you can have. It's very strong, but it's also very tasty. From there, most of the meals are described as being just fish, eggs, and vegetables. Not particular on the vegetables, but I'm assuming it's a lot of root vegetables and things that are indigenous to Jamaica. That's the 11th meal is mentioned as that, to kind of get his strength up for the underwater battle or the underwater siege that's about to take place. From there, his last meal in the Caribbean and kind of the celebratory meal is black crabs, also known as mud crabs or mangrove crabs. Also seems to be indigenous to the Caribbean. Suckling pig, avocado pear salad, guavas, and coconut cream. Now, coconut cream is something that you may already know. I believe he's just talking about coconut milk, which comes as being very thick already and can be enjoyed as a dessert. Guavas, another very tropical fruit. Avocado pear salad. This is interesting because in Casino Royale, he has avocado pears as a dessert. And avocado pears are just what you make guacamole with. It wasn't as well known to the European cultures or even in North America that much at the time. No one knew really what to do with it. But as a salad, it goes really, really well. Suckling pig kind of, this is something that I think we'll see Ray Krumpholt make in the next couple of weeks, you know, with his Traeger grill, all the grilling videos. I think he's going to try and tackle some big pieces of pig soon. So hopefully he does that. And black crabs, I've only really had experience with snow crab and king crab. I've prepared crab once in my life from live crabs and never again. Black crabs, I'm not sure what size they are, but I'm sure that they are going to be absolutely delicious. Now, I know this has been a long episode, and I know this episode has been just chock full of me talking about food. Grab yourself a snack. finish off this episode and enjoy Live and Let Die, the episode that precedes this with myself, Matt, and Edgar, as we review and dissect Ian Fleming's second novel. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Intrepid 007 podcast here on the James Bond Complex. Please follow us on our social media accounts at the James Bond Complex and at 007 Intrepid on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Until then, thanks for listening.